Well, happy Thursday. Hope you have had a good week thus far, and welcome to another installment of Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for tuning in on the radio side of things, and if you're following us via streaming audio, it's also good to have you on deck. Lots of ways to communicate with us, no matter what the topic may be from week to week, at 414-1234, the local number. If it's long distance from you to us, it's 800-926-8809. Perspectives@WFSU.org is the email, or you can tweet us at WFSU Perspective. You know, if you have a business, there's a good likelihood that you created that business, if not for the ages, at least for the long haul, right? And you'd kind of like that enterprise to continue and prosper even after you decide to move on. But without a well-thought-out plan before you step aside, the chances of your baby continuing in good condition following your departure could be greatly reduced or maybe even eliminated altogether. And even if you don't have a business, there are some good reasons to also apply the principles of successful succession in other life areas as well. And that's what we're going to talk about here on Perspectives this morning, making sure that that baby of yours, whether business or some other enterprise or organization or aspiration, kind of continues after you decide to shuffle off to do something else. We got a great panel here that we wanted to introduce you to before we get the discussion started. And we'll start on my left, your right, as you look at the radio here with Michael Khalifa, CPA and SFST with Thomas Howell Ferguson, a great accounting firm here in town. And good to have you, sir.
Good to be here. Thank you.
What does SFST stand for?
CFST, it's a certification in sales and use tax with the state of Florida.
Oh, okay. So a certificational a bunch of initials there that indicate that. So
that's correct.
Okay, very good. Good to have you, Michael. Really appreciate it. And from the banking sector, Chip Cicchetti, who is vice president and commercial banker with Hancock Bank. And good to have you, Chip.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, and over here on the Legal Eagle side, Stuart Goldberg with the law offices of Stuart E. Goldberg. Stuart, good to have you, sir.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I am in deep trouble right now. Can you get me off?
I'll try.
Okay, that sounds good. Let's start with that whole idea of succession, though, guys. For businesses, how critical is that? Because most people go in, they have the business plan. If they've been listening to us, and we get up with the folks in Jim Moran Institute and the Small Business Institute over at FAM, and this is how you do your plan, and you do your marketing strategies, and how are you going to promote and capitalize and all that, and you get this thing going, and you think, hey, I got more money coming in than's going out. I'm a success. A lot of folks don't think much beyond that or the day-to-day operation of the business. So who wants to start off with why having a plan in place for after you decide to bail on that thing is a good idea?
Well, I'll start if I can.
This is Stuart, by the way, guys.
Okay. Anyway, well, having a business succession plan is obviously very important for lots of reasons. You know, once you're in the business, as you say, various events could happen. There could be opportunities from others to purchase your business. You might become disabled. You might die at some point down the line. You might retire. And planning for all these events ahead of time is certainly better than having to deal with those issues, you know, after the fact. If one were to be disabled and not have a plan, well, what's going to happen to the business? How is it going to continue? If someone dies, you know, obviously that would be a significant issue. And through, you know, succession planning, your wills and estate planning, you'd want to address all those issues. And then certainly other events could happen relating to business opportunities, other, you know, acquisitions of similar businesses. Someone might offer to buy your business, and you need to be armed with information as far as what your business is worth and, you know, what would happen in the event any of these things occurred.
Boy, that sounds complicated, because if this, then what? And that list could go on for reams, right?
Well, sure. And if you've had a well-thought-out plan, you've certainly at least thought about all those issues. We draft lots of agreements, but we don't always address every issue within an agreement. You know, a business owner may simply be concerned, what happens to my business and my family if I die? and then we might have an agreement that just addresses that. But if you had two owners that were 50-50 owners or whatever the percentage was, and they were not family members and neither one wanted to have the other person's family in the business in the event one of us died or wanted to get out of the business, you might have an agreement that addresses, you know, those type of issues as between business partners. So there's, you know, it's kind of like a cafeteria. You know, there's tons of options, tons of issues that we could discuss insofar as succession planning. You know, only certain of those issues typically would be applicable to a particular person, and that's what we would address.
Okay. I am of a demographic old enough to recall when a lot of small businesses had a succession plan by default, which was the kid's going to take it over. It would be, I hate to use the band, but Mumford and Sons. And, you know, it would be a son or the sons would, or very seldom the daughters for some reason, would take over. And that doesn't work out too often anymore, does it, Michael?
Well, I think it depends. So Stuart talked about planning for events, what could happen, what might happen. But a lot of it is what do you want to happen? So part of it is planning for, do I want my children to inherit my business or my property? Do I want to sell my business to someone unrelated at all together. So I think it's what do you want out of it, and planning for that provides that flexibility and that opportunity. To your immediate question about does it still happen about transferring the business to the children, still happens very regularly.
Really?
Definitely. A lot of the businesses that we represent and the families that we represent that we're involved with have that in mind, and they work towards planning towards that. Some don't know how to start that process. That's where we come in, Stuart comes in, and Chip comes in to help provide that from a best practices perspective because we work with other similar businesses in similar situations. But it does still happen, and it can start that way, and it can lead somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it always helps if you have the assent of the children before you get involved in that, because that used to be, again, the default. I assume that my son, daughter, whomever is going to take over the business later, and a lot of times the kids say, uh-uh. And the dad would pass on, and the kids would just blow off the business completely. And that happened a lot. I remember growing up, Chip.
U.S. Wealth and Trust did a study in 2015, and of the business owners that they interviewed over 50 years old, only 36% of them had a formal succession plan. And of that 36, 16% passed it on to the kids. So only one out of five had a formal plan of kind of what we're going to talk about today. So I think it's more of a not, you know, fail to plan, so to speak, instead of getting it done the way you should. And I think in the examples that I've been involved with the companies trying to sell, the big thing I've always heard from the business owner is my concern for my people. I've had people that have been with me a long, long time that I really want to make sure they get taken care of. And when you have a succession plan, you outline that and make the next step so that everybody is very clear who's next in command and how this is going to go. And I think that helps people when an owner gets to a certain age and you start to wonder how many years is he going to still want to sit in that chair. You then, if you're a second or third command type person, you're starting to wonder, what is my future about? And if you're not sure where you're at, you might make a move to go somewhere else. But if the owner lays out a succession plan, hey, you're going to be the guy or you're going to be part of the team when I'm gone, I think that helps keep the continuity of the team going forward.
That's a great setup, Chip, for the kinds of things that can go wrong if you do not have a plan in place. And you said 37%, that's it? Whoa. Well, let's ask Stuart then. What are some of the horror stories? You know, businesses come to the end of the rope. The founder, the creator, the lead hoss, and the whole thing steps aside, and what? It just kind of all goes down the toilet, or can it be that bad?
Well, I've certainly experienced lots of different things. You know, I'm a tax attorney, and so I always have taxes on my mind. And you know, there's, you know, a situation. I mean, one comes to mind from several years ago. During the real estate glut, when you couldn't sell real estate, you know, we had a business that owned a lot of real estate, a lot of, you know, big tracts on I-10, Jackson County and up and down the panhandle of Florida. And the estate valuation was well exceeded whatever the estate tax threshold was. And there was a lot of tax that was due to the IRS. But there was no planning ahead of time, so there was no liquidity. we didn't have the ability to pay the tax without selling some of the assets of the estate, and because there was no real market for selling the property, you know, to raise the money to pay the tax, we would have had to have severely discounted the value. And if you would have liquidated all the property to pay the tax, at the end of the day, the government would have gotten everything basically, and there'd be nothing to share with the family because the appraisals are based on a valuation, not necessarily, you know, I mean, real estate didn't come in at zero on a valuation at that time, even though you couldn't sell it. So, you know, not planning for estate taxes, not planning for liquidity creditors, those are all, you know, things that could happen. And then as Chip said, simply, you know, what happens to my employees and who's in charge and do you have a business structure set up outside of taxes that, you know, who's going to be in charge and who's going to take over and who's, you know, willing to do that, able to do that. You know, those are all issues that, you know, pop up on the bad side.
Does it sometimes seem that the person who put the business together, the founder, the creator, becomes so identified with that organization that they can't even imagine it continuing after they're gone? If I bail, it ends. Or they can't just imagine it continuing as a separate thing. Do you ever see that go on, Michael?
Yeah, you do. I mean, if you think about it, when we opened up, you said that a business owner is focused on building their business, driving revenue, keeping the doors open, never really thinking about what's that next step. So they're building it. They become part of the business, one and the same, and they can't view, well, what does it look like without me? And so part of the succession planning process is institutionalizing their approach, their thought process in the organization so that it can continue on with a family member, a key employee, whatever the case is that you're trying to accomplish. Sometimes you accomplish that with different products, insurance, different people, consultants. There's a variety of ways you can tackle it, but a lot of succession planning is just as much emotionally planning as it is financially planning.
Yeah, just like the kid. And Chip, hold that thought. We're going right into a break here, and then we'll be back and talk more about successful succession planning here on Perspectives, whether for an individually owned business or maybe some other element of life that you got to think in advance if you wanted to continue in the way that you would like it to. 414-1234 is the local phone number here in the greater Tallahassee area, or 800-926-8809 long distance, and Perspectives at WFSU.org, the email. We'll be right back. We're back on Perspectives, talking about succession plans in business and in life in general, with Michael Khalifa, with Thomas Howell Ferguson, and Chip Schicchetti, Vice President, Commercial Banker with Hancock Bank, and Stuart Goldberg with the law offices of the very, very same. Chip, let's pick up where you were going here from the banking aspect of this whole thing.
Actually, I just want to piggyback on a comment Michael was making. I think when people get ready to retire, there's two things they need to consider. Are they financially ready and are they mentally ready? And I think that goes to the fact of some owners of their business so identify themselves with their business they can't separate it. So I've had many clients that are financially capable or ready to go, but they still love getting up and going to the business and running it every day. So I think those are some of the things that as a business owner you need to contemplate is, am I really ready to step back? Do I have the finances put away? And emotionally, am I ready to disconnect myself from the business? There's a Barry report out there. It's a 20-question survey. It takes 5-10 minutes. We can post the link and you can follow up on it, but it's very easy and it basically charts you and helps you determine whether or not you're financially and mentally ready to retire or to succeed or sell the business.
Sure, because we have heard the horror stories many times of folks who have hung on way, way too long, and the business would have been much more successful and prosperous if they had stepped back at an earlier time and let it kind of, you know, grow its own wings and fly away, if you will. But they held on to the bitter end, and it was bitter in many cases. Ken is on line one. Let's get him into the discussion here on Perspectives. Hi, Ken. Welcome.
Hey, thanks. How you doing?
Hey, we're doing good. Thanks.
I've got two comments or questions, as the case may be. Number one, succession planning, you guys seem to be focusing on the company die or the dying. Succession plans should include incapacitation of that lead person. If you've got a small business, that lead person might be the only one that's authorized to sign checks. So there's some legal issues that are associated with the CEO, especially if it's an incorporated, no longer in capacity to do the job, and succession planning should take that into account as well. You guys haven't covered that. Question number two, or comment number two, is succession planning is actually just one part of what, in my world, we call resiliency planning, and that is the ability of that business to continue operating regardless of circumstances that approach it. For example, you know, we're used to studying hurricanes and what happens to businesses, but being able to have redundancies built in your data locations, your IT configuration, cross-training of people so they're able to do multiple jobs. Business continuity planning or resiliency planning is one thing small businesses have trouble getting their arms around simply because of resource issues or not even being exposed to it. And I'll take your responses off the air, and thanks for letting me comment.
Well, good questions, Ken. Wow, that was awesome. Well, let's talk about the first item that he had, which is where the head honcho or honchoette of an organization may be the only one who is empowered to do a lot of the critical functioning, and something happens to them. That has to be built in even before that person leaves permanently, right? How do you do that, guys?
Well, I had mentioned at the beginning that the disability of the owner, you know, was an issue. You know, specifically, you know, from a personal standpoint, you know, if the owner would need to have their estate planning in order, durable powers of attorney or trust or something that would address the business owner's, you know, assets, which may include the ownership, you know, in the business itself. As to the business, again, I had mentioned something along the lines of, you know, working within the structure, identifying key employees. You know, if you're the president, who's the vice president? Who's the second vice president? You know, there could be a, you know, there's bylaws, there's an operating agreement if it's an LLC. So within the structure of the company itself, there has to be a mechanism as far as a hierarchy of who's in line to at a minimum to sign checks. But beyond that, making, you know, significant business decisions. And then from the personal estate planning side, powers of attorney and trusts can deal with the ownership of the entity itself, you know, in those lines. So those are all important issues to address.
Yeah, and beyond the incapacity, temporary or otherwise, of the lead person in the organization, you also have, as Ken brought up, what happens if critical parts of the infrastructure suddenly become a non-factor, whether it's I'm thinking here in terms of our organization. If the hurricane comes and knocks out commercial power, what do we do? Well, we have a backup generator. But what happens if the data network goes down, where 90% of our organization is focused on trying to get information in and all that sort of thing? We have to have that in place too. Chip?
When Hurricane Katrina hit, our bank, predominantly focused in the Gulf Southeast and out of Louisiana, Mississippi, and we actually ran the bank out of the Tallahassee office for about 30 days. And so we're a multi-billion dollar company, publicly traded. I know a lot of the folks out there probably don't have the same type of resources, but contingency planning does go into things like that. So from a banking standpoint, yes. And many of my clients, I do have several that are in manufacturing, and they have redundant facilities. I have one that has one in Bainbridge and one in Crawfordville in terms of manufacturing plants, so they can make the same product out of both places if they get impacted. And both are very convenient to I-10 and things of that nature. So yes, I think your caller's right that you do need to be prepared for some of those redundancies. But in some cases, it just depends on how many resources you have that you can actually do that.
Yeah, and like Michael, with the accounting function, if it is all just on the one desktop in the boss's office and something happens to that, then what?
Yeah, so I think what Ken was getting to is we focused a lot of the discussion on ownership of a business, passing that on to a second generation, but you could just as equally address his question with an association. So remove business ownership from the discussion. An executive director of a nonprofit association, for example, there needs to be a plan in place to transition that role to the next generation of leadership in an organization, just as equally as if it's a small business, closely held, and working through those dynamics.
Yeah, we've even seen here in town where there have been situations with a nonprofit organization that may have it has a board of directors and all of that, but there is a crisis of leadership at the top, and the board suddenly freezes, and they can't move forward. They don't get any new organization in place, and that enterprise fizzles right before your very eyes because no one knows who does what to whom or who is supposed to make the decisions on that. And can you help people put that thing together, Stuart? Is that part of what you do?
To some degree, yes. I mean, you know, I do a lot of business incorporation. So, you know, we address those issues at the onset. You know, who's on the board? How is the board going to operate? You know, who are the executives? You know, so it depends on the business. If it's one person, then you're looking more into the future. If it's, you know, a group of people, you're trying to identify and plan for the structure from the outset.
Yeah, and that's a big thing, too, because a lot of organizations just have an advisory board, but how much power do they really have under their articles of, if not incorporation, just their charter or how they're put together, and who gets to make those decisions, and when are those decisions supposed to be made? What are the tripwires that you have built into that whole plan?
Well, sure. When you set up a corporation, there's supposed to be bylaws that are the rules governing the operation of the company. And in an LLC, you have an operating agreement, or a partnership, you would have a partnership agreement, but some legal document that defines everybody's role within the company and how it operates and what the structure is and what happens if a shareholder dies or a member of the LLC dies or is disabled and how power is shifted. So, you know, if you've properly addressed all those issues at the beginning, you're going to have some, you know, mechanism to deal with that within the organizational documents.
Tom, it's probably important as well to maintain that document as well, because I've gone to close many loans, and we need to rely upon those documents to determine who can execute the documents on behalf of the entity. And that person is either changed or is not in that capacity. So we've had to modify the document at the time of the closing so that we could validly close the loan. So I think it's important to not just put it on the shelf and forget about it.
Has that ever squelched a deal? Someone comes and, you know, the thing is just so out of date. You go, none of these people are even here.
When you work with guys like Stuart and Michael, you figure out a way to get it done.
I can create an organizational document pretty quickly.
Got a template right here. Look at this thing. Anthony joins the discussion here on Line 1. Hi, Anthony. Thanks for calling Perspectives.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I wanted to let you know that our firm does this kind of assistance for succession and sale of business. And one of the ways we prepare organizations is to restructure the organization so that they have the wherewithal to operate without those key people there. One of the ways you can test it is a vacation test. If a key person is unable to take an extended vacation without the organization functioning properly, then it's not set up administratively to operate for a succession or for a sale. So this helps a company to design its structure so that they can do this successfully.
Wow. Is the expectation, do you think, Anthony, that in today's climate, everyone is on call around the clock, no matter whether they're on vacation or whatever, and so they don't even think of this stuff?
Well, I mean, you know, of course, in this day and time, you're able to contact somebody no matter where they are in a pretty short notice through email and cell phone. But even so, just having the confidence to leave for an extended period of time, and I'm not talking about 1 or 2 weeks, but I'm talking about 3 or 4 weeks, and having your company operate successfully, even doing so points out what the problems are so that you can address them when you return.
Wow.
So it's a good way to kind of figure out whether or not you're in the position to either sell the business or transition to a family member.
And let's give a plug for your firm. What organization are you associated with, Anthony?
I work with Harvard & Associates, a CPA firm here in Tallahassee.
Oh, very cool. Well, thank you for that information. Appreciate that, Anthony.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, too. You kind of, part of this process sounds like you are setting up almost like little litmus tests. And again, that if this, then what? and a bunch of those. And maybe that's where folks like you and Anthony and all that come in. You need professionals like you to help go down that long laundry list, because you're all bringing up things that probably the average person, certainly I, don't routinely think about. But if you're going to have a business or any other kind of an organization, you need to have a lot of this stuff in place from the get-go. So even before we get into a lot of the other things that you guys can do, is this something that you incorporate maybe into some of the other resources for small business and entrepreneurship in the area? Like, you guys go out and talk to different organizations and all that? Is that Stuart?
Yes. I mean, I've spoken to many groups as far as, you know, how to set up a business, how to incorporate, you know, why you incorporate different, you know, types of entities and the like. So, you know, once the entity is set up, you know, as part of that, there is, as I say, a smorgasbord of issues to address, and we've touched on many, you know, of those issues. There's certainly more, but a good plan will sit down with a professional advisor and, you know, address what's most important to that person in that business.
So maybe even before you get the enterprise off and running, this is what you need to do, is not just, as we said at the outset, go through what sounds like the basic, make sure you have a good financing package together enough to get you through X number of months of operation of no revenue, et cetera, but you've got to have the internal structure really solid before you kick this thing off.
That's correct.
Okay. What are some of the other considerations we haven't touched on here, guys? I know there's a bunch more. I see Chip's going over his notes here, which are voluminous.
I guess some of the things you might consider if you're selling the company is, who do I want to sell to and why? There's different types of buyers. There's strategic buyers. So, for instance, if you're in a geographic area, let's say the client, say you operate obviously in Tallahassee or in Florida, and the person who's looking at buying your business is in Georgia or Tennessee or somewhere close by, and geographically you make a nice fit for them, you do the same thing they do, only you do it geographically. They can come in, it's much easier to buy market share than to build market share. So they'll come in and they may pay you 120, 150% of what your business is worth simply because it fits strategically. They can then, he can now put a strategic plan together from a geographic point of view, where he can now stretch from Georgia to Florida to South Carolina and so on and so forth. And it has more value to a strategic buyer because it fits a need from that standpoint. So that's one of the things you want to consider when you're selling. And most business owners are probably trying to get as much or the biggest bang for the buck that they can. Strategic buyers kind of fit a little differently than either an investor or a competitor. An investor is somebody who basically wants to get a certain amount of rate of return from the loan. I'm going to put $100,000 into your business and I expect to get 8% out of that. So I better get, you know, the requisite return to make it happen. A competitor might want to take you out from the standpoint of, one less competitor out there, I can raise prices, it helps me do other things. So the big thing to consider then is, what happens to my employees and my folks and my clients that I've built if I sell to each one of those groups? And there's a little bit of different dynamic. So that's something to consider when you're going down that path. The other thing, I'm going to then kick it over to these two guys, is when you sell the business, it's not what you get, it's how much you keep. And then and I'll let Michael talk a lot more about the tax standpoint, but I think that's a huge piece that a business owner really needs to contemplate, is, what do I get at the end of the day when I sell this, in terms of, this is an asset sale or a stock sale, or how I structure it? I'll step aside.
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah. So to answer the question, you know, what do we see that needs to be done or that is not done? And really, it's allowing adequate time to plan. So a lot of times, you know, Stuart and I, our firms have worked together on different deals, and, you know, a client will come in and say, I have a deal on the table, and, you know, I've agreed to terms and we've got to move forward the next, you know, 30 days or so. But I want to minimize my taxes, to Chip's point. So a lot of that, when something's, you know, the deal's inked, it's tough to unwind those type of things. You have to plan ahead to work through the logistics of how much of the sales price is allocated to this versus this. You know, what is the form of the transaction? So it's really allowing proper time to work through those dynamics, because you typically want to frame the deal economically. So what are the terms financially? And then, you know, how is it best possible to maximize the transaction to minimize my taxes? And typically in deals, when there's a, you know, there's a seller and a buyer, of course, the transaction they're working in different directions. So what's good for me is probably not going to be good for you as a seller and vice versa. So negotiating that and managing that all takes time. There's give and take. So allowing adequate time to work through the process, I think, is something that I would encourage any business owner who's contemplating an exit.
Yeah. Any other factors there, Stuart, you thinking of?
Well, there's probably two issues that I deal with most in you know, every day. One is, you know, actually how to value the business. You know, what is my business or my interest in the business worth? And from an IRS perspective, you know, any valuation that you use has to be at arm's length. There's, you know, no validity, and the IRS would disregard any transaction where I sold my business to my son for $1,000. Okay, so typically, you know, the best way for evaluation is they have specialized business appraisals, you know, and you know that to me is the best way. There are companies that will analyze your business in connection with the industry, in connection with the economy, trends, what part of the country are you in, and arrive at some conclusion of value. And you know, a business valuation firm that's experienced and knowledgeable to me is invaluable, because if you have a strong appraisal, from a tax point of view, the valuation will hold up upon an audit by the IRS, and you're working with good information. It's just like anything else. You know, the best information that you can have, the best decision you can make. If you have a lousy appraisal, then you're not going to be well informed. For some business owners, however, the cost of and those specialized business appraisals are not cheap. I mean, they could be anywhere. I've seen them up to $15,000, you know, or more.
Yeah, but your tax liability could be a heck of a lot more off there. Let's hold that thought. We'll be back with more as we talk about a plan of succession for your business or other organization with our great panel of experts here on Perspectives. 414-1234, the local number you want to kick into the conversation, 800-926-8809. If it's long distance, and Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. We shall return. Will your enterprise outlive you? Hopefully. The answer is yes, and that's what our panel's talking about here on Perspectives, a plan of succession to have in place no matter what your endeavor might be in life, particularly if it is a business. I remember from the 80s with all the hostile takeovers and that kind of thing. Can you have a plan of succession that says, yes, I realize I will not live forever, and I want this enterprise to go beyond me, but I will not under any circumstances have it go to that SOB. Be so and so, such and such. Can you build that into the plan, like a competitor or someone else you do not want to see get your asset, not no way, not no how? Does that? Can you do that, Stuart?
To a degree. I mean, you may not be able to control who somebody that you sell to sells down the line. You know, there's restrictions as far as owning real estate that you can put in a deed. And if you have stock, you can build in, you know, the corporation, the restrictions on the stock as far as who can actually own the stock. You know, family members, you don't want it to go to spouses, you know, or ex-spouses. And I don't want to be in business with the children of my deceased partner. But somewhere down the line, eventually, you know, all those people could theoretically agree to change that agreement. So you can have an agreement that would be in place for some period of time. You know, anything theoretically can be changed.
Yeah, but not in perpetuity. That is not going to fly. Michael, you brought up something during the break that is kind of interesting. Whereas an earlier generation may have literally tried to build for the ages, I want this to continue on generation after generation, especially if my name's attached to it. Okay, that's really cool. That's a neat form of immortality. My business carries my name hundreds of years into the future. But with the more millennial type of generation now, we hear about residential real estate flipping. Do you have commercial flipping too?
Well, in the context of succession planning, so you have a generation when you're looking at that, the new generation, the millennials, there's a more of a focus on work-life balance. So there's an interest of not necessarily plowing everything they have emotionally, financially into a business, into a house, into whatever. In terms of the planning, as we get into it, the context was there seems to be more of an issue with a baby boomer generation, for example, their names on the door, wanting to see that, not necessarily wanting to let that go, and wanting to work until they want to, what have you. Whereas on the flip side, where the next generation, the planning is with that second generation, that 30s to 40-year-old range, the discussion's more, I'm only interested in working for the next 20 years or the next 15 years, so that it's not a perpetuity thought. It's a finite period of time, which is just somewhat different.
Well, they may be a little bit less inclined to be thinking in terms of a succession, again, because, hey, when I'm gone, I don't care.
I think they're probably more inclined to the succession because they've defined their time period where it's, hey, I'm only going to be interested in this for the next 15 or 20 years. I'm 35. I only want to work to 60, for example. So they've kind of they've done a bookend, so they know when their start is and when their end is, as opposed to if I'm in a different generation, I may just do this till I die kind of thing. And that's what leads to the lack of planning and the lack of succession issues that we've talked about this morning.
So, and as you said, Chip, if you've only got just a relatively small fraction of the total number of businesses that have this plan in place, looks like the earlier generation may have been kind of falling down on the job when it came to this, because I will live forever and so too will my business, right?
It is challenging. I mean, it's something you need to consider. I've seen it across the board. I mean, when I meet with a new client, usually one of the first questions I ask is, what's your exit strategy? And the purpose being, one, have you thought about it? And two, do you know where you want to go? And if you do, then I can help you get there. And so you start those things in motions, and every once in a while you'll see the light bulb pop and the business owner will be like, oh gosh, I think there's something I need to do quick. And other times, yeah, here's what it's going to be. Junior's going to take it over, or I know I'm going to run it for some period of time. And then many of my clients tell me, I get a call every other month from XYZ company willing to pay me X dollars for the business. So most of them kind of have a default plan in the back of their head that they could sell the company to somebody if they got pushed or they had to.
But that's got to be a buzzkill for some folks. I just got this business started. I'm so excited. It's going to go on and on and on. And you're going, yeah, but how are you going to get out of it?
Well, one of the things that we could spend a minute or two talking about as well is, how do you finance that deal? Because there's one side, there's a buyer, and one side, there's a seller. The guy that's selling it, or the gal that's selling it, is going to come in a lot of money. That creates a liquidity event, and they need to invest those dollars. And then for the people that are buying it, how do they come up with it? Most of the folks don't have that amount of money in their bank account to be able to write a check for it. So you have a multitude of ways to do it, but usually there's a bank financing piece. The buyer puts in some equity, and then it's very common to see the seller of the business then take back a note as well to plug the difference. That's usually the goodwill or the blue sky piece. Or from the banking vernacular, that's when I run out of collateralized assets. There's nothing left. This is the goodwill of the company, guys. I can't, you know, lend against that in a normalized or conventional fashion. So the owner ends up taking back the paper. So there, you know, that's something you need to be ready for as well as a business owner. How much of, you know, if I sell you the business and the business falters, but I'm holding this note for $1 million, it isn't worth the paper it's printed on. What did I get?
Exactly.
Those are things you need to contemplate as well.
Yeah. What's true?
Well, I mean, what you said is correct insofar as a bank loan for financing. You know, oftentimes in smaller businesses, when we have buyouts that are set up amongst shareholders or partners, you know, certainly traditional bank financing could work. But we also have other, you know, plan as part of the plan. When we're valuing the buyout, we kind of have an idea of, if you die, here's a formula that it's going to cost me X to buy you out. How am I going to pay that? We know ahead of time what the actual number would be based on the valuation within the agreement. So you could set a reserve within the company. You could pay out of operations depending on your cash flow. But oftentimes we use life insurance, and we don't have any life insurance person here. But in any event, if you and I were 50-50 owners, you could buy a life insurance policy on me, and I could buy a life insurance policy on you. And if we agree that if one of us dies, we're going to buy the other one's interest at a price, because I don't want to be in business with your family and you don't want to be in business with mine, well, how am I going to get the $1 million to pay for your interest if I die? Well, the life insurance would pay off to you. There'd be a contract that obligates my estate to sell my interest in the business to you. The contract would obligate you to buy my interest. You'd have the funding through the life insurance. So the bank loan is for traditional, you know, financing, but you know, oftentimes we don't know when the event will be. So we're not applying for a bank loan. We're using a formula within an agreement, and we're trying to plan for that event in the future.
However, that presumes that there is at least some kind of meeting of the minds. When you're dealing with a partnership, do you ever have to play referee when you have business partners and they have very different concepts of how this stuff should go? I see you nodding your head there, Chip.
Not only do they have different concepts of how it should go, they have different ideas of what it's worth. And that's trying to get two people on the same page and how I value it. Well, so-and-so will pay me X for it is not exactly an appraisal. Or, you know, a discounted cash flow approach where this business throws off X dollars and I can use an internal rate of return and back into the number that I would pay for the business. You know, those are trying to get people on the same page. I've seen a lot of people value their company. Well, my gross revenues are $4 million. I'm going to sell it for 2x gross revenues. Well, the cash flow of the business doesn't provide enough cash flow to pay that, to provide that kind of sale price. So just getting people to that simplistic value of what it's worth can be challenging. I know Michael's got some thoughts on that too.
Yeah, well, you're the numbers guy. You give the reality check and say, guys, this is totally beyond the pale. This is not going to fly, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking through when we do a lot of recruiting at Florida State for accounting students at our firm. And part of the discussion is that, yeah, you're coming to do a financial statement, audits, taxes, that kind of thing. But so much of what we do goes beyond that. And part of it is what you just said, is working with business owners, helping them come to agreement in terms of operationally, these are the issues, financially, these are the issues, and just kind of help working with people like Stuart and Chip to help make it all come together so that it is an agreement in the best interest of the organization.
The takeaway, if folks are just tuning in now and saying, what are these guys talking about, is that if you are involved in any kind of a aspiration to start a business or any kind of an organization, it just as you would not probably get the guy next door, unless he is massively qualified, to do your brain surgery, you also should not really jump into doing a business without consulting real professionals like you guys or the equivalent somewhere. This is all very, very technical. There are a lot of pitfalls, and you could lose much more than your shirt, obviously. You know, I'm seeing pantless people running around here. And
Tom, if I could mention one other thing that we didn't talk a little bit about is an ESOP has become a little more prevalent. I've seen a couple of people approach the bank about
employee stock ownership plan. Yeah,
that's where the employees get together and they buy the company from the owner. You do need a very specialized individual to help do that. The bank does partner with some folks that can provide that. But it is another opportunity. Again, the number one thing that I hear from a business owner when he's thinking or she's thinking about selling their business, how do I protect, how do I take care of my people? So if you go the ESOP route, a business owner, she can feel very comfortable knowing that her people are going to be just as well taken care of as when she was there running the business. So it's another way to provide financing for a purchase that is not often thought about.
Sure, because they become the owners. Essentially. And any other things that you can kind of build into these to say, okay, we took care of this. That's one less thing we have to worry about in advance. Stuart?
Well, I'm trying to go into my mind of all the things we've addressed. We've had, you know, what happens if you have a disagreement amongst business owners? How are disputes resolved? What happens if you violate the company policy? You get charged with a crime? So you can build in all kinds of provisions within these agreements to address, you know, dispute resolution. If you're two 50% owners and one says yes and one says no, the business can be deadlocked. And absent some dispute resolution methodology, the court's going to ultimately get involved and dissolve your company and you go down the tube. So to avoid that, you would have some methodology included in there. In the agreement, we might provide provisions regarding the divorce or bankruptcy of a business owner because, again, I don't want to be in business with your ex-wife or I don't want your interest in this business sold on the steps of the U.S. bankruptcy court to pay your creditors. So we build those provisions in there. If we just turn out to not like each other anymore. You know, we can have shootout provisions where, you know, I have the right to buy you out at a set price, or you have the right to buy me out at a set price if you don't exercise that right. So you can build in, you can address and contemplate as many of these issues as you want and address whatever you think might be the most relevant.
And does that usually, if there are no guarantees in life, certainly, but does that make it more likely that the enterprise will, if not perform better, at least perform more smoothly? Does that help, Michael?
Sure. I mean, anytime you can do planning ahead of time and address as many issues as possible, it's going to give you the best chance to succeed, keep the organization going. But as Chip said before, the part of the thing is that businesses are not static. They're dynamic. They're changing. The ownership changes. The management changes. New business lines evolve. So you have to look at your documents as more of a living document as opposed to something that you did 20 years ago when you formed the business, put it in your safe, and bring it back out whenever an event happens. It's periodically reviewing those documents, checking to make sure they're current with what the current business practices are.
Well, like a personal will, counselors usually say you're supposed to go back every several years and just review it, even if there have been no changes from your end, because there may be changes from other ends that you have not contemplated. And so that tune-up process then is something that you guys suggest for any organization to do. Just go in and every couple years drag it off the shelf, go through it with a professional and say, look, are we missing anything here?
Well, just as an example, even if there's not changes in your business practice, changes in your ownership or management as examples, there's changes in tax law. There's changes in judicial precedent, you know, to Stewart's side of it, that can impact how you decide to handle certain things.
You say there are changes in law, Stewart? When does that happen?
About once every 6 years under the current Congress.
Yeah, but then you also have Florida statutes to deal with here, too. We call the legislature, they have a tendency to change a couple, three things every year.
The other thing that you know, if you have a formula within an agreement for a valuation, typically, you know, there may be a provision that requires a redetermination of valuation, you know, periodically. So for any at a minimum, forgetting the other issues, the valuation issue of the business should be reviewed, you know, very often, at least annually, because if you are having a formula based on earnings or some, you know, financial event, you know, that's based on my projection of what's going to happen. So when it actually happens, you know, you need to keep revaluing or revisiting the valuation.
Just a couple minutes that we have remaining here, guys, to go around just one more time. Chip.
One other thing we haven't talked a little bit about is the process itself. I've been involved in a few of them, and generally you're asked to sign confidentiality agreements up front, which I highly advise, particularly for the selling entity, from the standpoint of you don't want your employees getting nervous, and because you're going to probably have two or three dress rehearsals before you actually get the one that goes. And so I've been asked as a bank to provide confidential information. The sellers asked us to sign it, which we've done, and we communicate confidentially. But having that succession plan, again, helps your senior people know that they're taken care of, and the people that you want to have online, you usually need to bring them into the loop because they need to interact with the buyer to understand the inner workings of the business and what they're actually buying. But having that confidentiality, a couple things, having the confidentiality agreement, be patient, expect a couple dry runs, and then do, you know, strike the best deal you can from a tax consequence.
Yeah, and probably the best advice of all, guys, don't freak out, because that always happens. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the process unfolds and you think it's going to go one way and it ends up going in a different direction. And that's not, you know, that's with a lot of things in life, I guess. But with, you know, with planning, succession planning, we've talked about a lot about the business ownership, how that unfolds. I thought it was a great comment from our caller, Ken, I think it was, about, hey, focusing on the management side, not just the ownership side, the employment, the operation side. I think that's important as well. So to me, I think that the biggest piece that we see is just having the conversation and addressing it, something as fundamental, as simple as that, as opposed to just keeping your head down and doing business as usual, but planning for the exit strategy, planning for an unintended event like Stewart brought up. So
No matter how bad you think things can be, they could be worse unless you think ahead and try to get ahead of those kinds of situations. And with the advice of great guys like you, that becomes a lot less likely to go down in flames, along with our hopes and dreams and aspirations and maybe even our personal relationships if they're tied into the business. I tell you guys, Michael Khalifa and Chip Schettini and, of course, Stuart Goldberg, thank you all for coming on and talking about this today on Perspectives, guys.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls, handling the calls and emails today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Now that we got your enterprise nice and healthy, when it comes to the future, how about your health? Well, next week, the folks who bring you the Working Well Initiative that's out to make the capital city a much healthier place to work will be on deck with us, and we will talk about it then right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.